Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's MWD, Freedom Fiends, Hype Man, and Hype Man for some new awesome things that are going to be saviors of the internet, but I think I've said too much already. I am Nima Vedati here in the Texas Hill Country in the dense fog today with 100% humidity. Michael W. Dean, I think he's getting blizzarded. He's getting snowpocalypse. How's it doing, Mr. Dean?
Yeah, it's good. And snowpocalypse means a little bit different of something here in Wyoming than it does in Austin. This is a place where they don't close the schools unless you get over a foot of snow. And I think we're getting it all at once and it's coming horizontally. It's a whiteout. It's a whiteout, folks.
All right, that's not where you protest
people of that race. It's
and
a whiteout.
Your internet has to go up the tube both ways.
I know. And yeah, I am busy. I am busier than a beaver on payday. No, I don't know. I'm too busy to come up with an analogy that you haven't heard before for that. I am building the roads. They always say, who's going to build the roads without the government? Well, I am working on it with several people. And, you know, if you think I'm talking about free speech me, that is so last week, man. There's something special coming out that's like, I'm going to be like, free speech me? What century are you in? But
I thought you weren't even done promoting free speech.
I've said too much. I'm not. It's still great for certain things.
Okay.
So I'm going to be working on cat icons, making cat icons for my new thing today. And that's just how good we are here at radio. How good we are at radio here at the Freedom Feeds. I can admit that. I can freely say it's kind of like the guy who's on the tightrope and he's like reading a book. Like, yeah, I don't care. I don't give a flying pie. And ooh, I hear the train.
I hear the train coming.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear it. And we're going to do such good radio today while I'm just half here and kind of checked out. It's kind of like punk rock bands. I used to go see them in the 80s and the 70s, late 80s. I used to play in them. I used to tour the world with them and play the basements of the world in many different states and countries. Ooh. And that's where I learned that people are all the same and you shouldn't judge people just because what their government's doing. And
because of where they're born,
yeah,
et cetera.
Yeah, it's an accident of birth, man. God didn't ordain that you'd be born in America or France or Germany. And you have to understand, too, that like people in those countries have just as much like national pride for their country and think they're right as you do about your country. But here's the thing, man. I'd see these bands, and the bands is what made it all cool. And everybody was playing in these bands that were great. And a lot of them were pretty good. A lot of them weren't that good. And then some of them were just great. Like, the whole thing was great, but there were some bands that really stood out. And the ones that really stood out to me were the ones that would, like, show up drunk a half hour late, do no sound check, climb up on stage using someone else's equipment because their other car never got there. And they would just play their... I can't even say on radio, like, the words I need to describe how well they would play and just blow you away. And you're like three,
it would just rock it.
3 feet away from you. Like, it would blow your hair back, literally. Yeah. You know, but you didn't have any because you had a shaved head because it was punk rock. But these bands, I mean, some of them just looked like, I mean, they were like chewing gum and smoking cigarettes and spitting out the window while they were playing. Like, they didn't even, they barely looked like they were there. And it was some of the most visceral stuff I ever remember in my life. So that's going to be me today while Nima does an interview with Davi Barker. Can we bring Davi Barker on? Davi Barker, come on down!
Woo! What's up, guys? How's it going?
Good, man. Who are you and what do you do? Who are you and why should we care? That's what they say in news.
Why I'm Davi Barker. I do lots of things. What are we here talking about? Bitcoin not bombs, shinybadges.com. I just published a zombie novel at survivormax.com.
Yay.
I am all over the internet. I am the Renaissance man of the interwebs.
That doesn't mean anything to the TSA, though. They don't care.
No, it doesn't mean anything to the TSA.
Although maybe it shouldn't mean anything to the TSA, because if they knew more about what you really do, they probably would have detained you for longer. Why did they detain you?
They saw Bitcoin in my luggage.
What? Bitcoin? That's like seeing an email in your luggage. What does that mean?
That means that the TSA has been trained that Bitcoin is a dangerous substance that should not be allowed on airplanes.
Substance.
And they have no idea what it is.
They should have a limit, though. You can have like 0.001 Bitcoin on a plane.
Yeah, there should be a breathalyzer test. They should be able to do a blood test and detect Bitcoin in my bloodstream.
Yeah, yeah. I like that, man. That's awesome. So tell us the story for those who haven't heard it yet. This is basically training for you going to be on the Alex Jones next week show next week? They don't know it yet. Yeah, like I asked you when the day after this happened, I said, "So, have you gotten called by, you know, are you going to be on Alex Jones?" And you're like, "How do you get on Alex Jones?" And I'm like, "They call you." And you're like, "What do you mean?" And I'm like, "I mean, I'm on their network and I can't call them and get on there with my world-changing internet thing, free speech me, that is already changing the internet so much. It's last week and there's something better coming out." But, you know, they'll call you. And I was like, "They'll call you. I just know they'll call you. This is so Alex Jones." And you're like, "I don't know. Should I contact them?" I'm like, "No, they'll contact you." And the next day they wrote you up in InfoWars. And that means Sunday or Monday or Tuesday, they're probably going to call you. That's my prediction. So this is
well, I sure hope rehearsal. So, because they misreported a lot of the facts of the story in their coverage. Okay.
What did they miss?
Did they call and talk to you, Davi? Did you get interviewed for it? Or they just repost what they had seen that you wrote?
What they did was they read the Business Insider article and they just re-reported what was in the Business Insider article, which was also sort of loose on the facts.
Well, where'd the Business Insider article come from? Did they call and interview you?
They emailed me just to get a clarification on what Bitcoin Not Bombs was. And so essentially every time this story is told, it mutates a little bit.
Well, it's the telephone game, right? I mean, a lot of internet stories are like that now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the primary thing that everybody is getting wrong is that they think that I actually had anything Bitcoin related in my bag, and I didn't.
Yeah, what'd you have? Tell us the story. I mean, not everybody's read. Not everybody who listens to conservative talk radio reads all of the feisty anarchist magazines that have reported this about you. Start from the beginning.
So from the beginning, I am at Liberty Forum, where I was presenting on a charity panel.
I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. You got to explain
Liberty
that.
Liberty Forum is one of the Free State projects. You don't know what that is.
I know what that is. Our listeners.
It doesn't matter. I was flying home from New Hampshire, and I was carrying inventory that I sell at a conference. I sell these metallic lapel pins from shinybadges.com, right? And I had about maybe 200, 300 lapel pins in my bag. So when they x-rayed my bag, they said, "You know, there's some strange metal in here. We want to open this up and see what it is." And this has happened to me before. That's sort of common. But at the time, I'm also wearing my Bitcoin Not Bombs hoodie, which has like a plain dropping Bitcoin like screen printed on it.
Yeah, right? And it's. I mean, people have said it looks like it's dropping bombs, but to me, here's how I look at it. I look at it like a Red Cross dropping
care packages.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that is exactly the intent of the logo. We are raining. We are the world's first decentralized aircraft, and we are raining Bitcoin on the world.
And you do charity and you take Bitcoin because you didn't want to jump through the hoops to be a 501c3 FCC or the other three letter group. What is it? IRS licensed.
We didn't file for any paperwork or anything. We take Bitcoin. We help other charities get set up to take Bitcoin. And one of our campaigns was that we bought these hoodies and we gave them out to the homeless in San Francisco. And so I was wearing that hoodie. So essentially, They pull me aside. They say, "We need to look in your bag." And they start pulling the lapel pins out of my bag and saying, "We need to scan this again." And what's interesting is that these are in clear plastic tubes, so they can clearly see everything that's in them. There's no real point in x-raying them. But while they're unloading my bag, the TSA woman says, "Are there any coins in here?" And I said, I said, "No, why?" And she says, "I'm just making sure there's nothing valuable." Now, at the time, that didn't strike me as very strange, but in hindsight, it does strike me as very strange. For one reason, the x-ray machine is not designed to detect coins. And the second reason, U.S. coins are not terribly valuable anyway.
Well, if they were silver coins, like pre-1964 coins, they might be.
Well, also, doesn't coin have a specific legal designation that can get you in trouble? Isn't there someone in prison because they...
Yes, it does. Yeah. And I think that legal mumbo-jumbo is why that question has been added to their script. Is that
we're talking about
gotcha
Bernard
question.
Von Nothaus, the Liberty Dollar guy? Is that what you're referring to,
right,
Michael?
Yeah.
Right, exactly. But it's also the standard for any cryptocurrency. It's Namecoin, it's Altcoin, it's Feathercoin. Everything is called a coin. So if they say, "Do you have any coins in your bag?" they could construe that as a gotcha question if they discover that you have it later.
Yeah, law enforcement...
That's my tinfoil hat. I don't know that that's true, but that's what I think that question is for.
All those people.
Weren't you saying that the lady who was asking these questions is one of those weaseled TSA agents that's there to commit psychological warfare on potential terrorists?
She's a behavioral detection officer. Some of the other Free Staters were able to identify her based on my description.
Did you say she's 8 years old?
She's what?
Did you say she's 8 years old?
No, I said she's a behavioral detection officer.
Okay, go ahead, Nima, take it.
What do you mean 8 years old?
I think he misheard you. He doesn't know what that is. So we'll let Grandpa go eat his fried crickets.
fried Quislings.
She clears me, and she says, "You're good to go. There's no guns hidden in your lapel pins. You can pack up your things, and you can leave." And so I start walking toward Bill Buford, who I'm traveling with. He's from ZeroGov.com.
He's our guest tomorrow, by the way.
Awesome.
And both of you guys, Bill and Davi, are going to be in my regular my cast of regular rotating co-hosts on my upcoming show, Michael Dean After Dark. And I'm honored that you guys are, by the way.
Yeah. Well, he's awesome. I especially love his commitment to clear language. He's very careful with the words that he chooses. So I'm walking up to Bill, and I'm confronted by two men in like shirt and tie. And one of them asks me, "Where are you traveling today?" And I didn't know who they were, so I said, "Earth." And they said, "Can you be more specific?" And I said, "The northern part." So I was being a little bit of a smart aleck, but I didn't know who they were, you know? Like, some stranger walks up to me and starts asking questions, and he doesn't identify himself. What am I supposed to say? But then they said, "Just answer the question." And that's bureaucrat speech, right? That's state speech.
Right.
So as soon as I realized I was still talking to security, I stopped cooperating. I stopped answering questions, and I immediately asked, "Are you conducting an investigation, and am I under suspicion for some reason?"
And they began that to be, you know, difficult. You're doing it to try to cover yourself and avoid the worst that they can do to you, right?
I'm doing that because I know, because I'm married to a civil rights attorney, I know that anything that I say, even if it's construed as incorrect, will then be used as I will be accused of lying or hindering an investigation, and they'll use that charge to try to coerce other cooperation from me. So at that point, anything you say to them is a weapon against you, whether it's true or false.
They say it in their own Miranda. It can and will be used against you.
Right. So they start saying, "We need to just find out if you're traveling internationally." I say, "Do you have any evidence that I'm traveling internationally?" They say, "We want to search your bag for your boarding pass because we need to confirm whether or not you're traveling internationally."
And all right. Well, we'll go ahead and finish that up here after the jump. We're going to take a short trip to the market. Stay with us, fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends, not your grandpa's talk radio.
Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends Live Talk Radio Show. That's Mr. Michael W. Cat. Mr. Michael W. Dean, sorry. We've also got Davi Barker on the show with us. He was stopped by TSA agents and even TSA management. Ooh, scary. Or do they call them commanders? I don't know. But they were asking him if he had any Bitcoin in his bag. Now, anybody who knows what Bitcoin is knows how ridiculously silly that is. And I've been saying this for months, that the pictures you see on Bitcoin articles of those little brass coins, man, that's going to confuse people. And I did not in a million years imagine it would confuse TSA agents to think that somebody was carrying a sack full of physical Bitcoins, but apparently it did. Now, when we last left Davi, he was sitting down being questioned by two goons in suits, or at least shirts and ties. What else did they ask you, Davi?
Well, I was still standing in the terminal, just to be clear. They hadn't whisked me away to a private interrogation room, but they wanted to search my bag, and they said they wanted to search my bag for my boarding pass. And I said, "The TSA has already searched my bag. They've unpacked it and repacked it, and they've determined there's nothing dangerous, so I don't want to consent to a search." And then one of the officers said, "Well, what about the Bitcoin?" And I was flabbergasted. I was like, the TSA is now asking me about about Bitcoin. So I said, what are you talking about? Like, I don't even understand your question. And he says, we think we saw Bitcoin in your bag and we just need to check. And so at this point, Bill Buper chimes in. He says, you know, Bitcoin is – what you're saying doesn't make any sense. Bitcoin is a digital commodity. It has no physical representation. What you're saying doesn't make any sense.
And Bill, so let me interject here. Bill Buper is a former – a retired officer in the United States Army. So he is a very – he communicates very clearly. He's very like not militaristic, but he's like military. Like he goes by atomic time. He has an atomic time watch. He's very precise.
He's precise,
including in what he told when they asked him if he wanted to be searched, and he said something I can't say on radio. He said, "Yeah, but you can search me, but don't touch my D whatever
Richard,
yeah. my Richard." Yeah, and they just didn't know what That's to do right. with that, man.
So now that he's entered the scene, he's made himself into a person of interest, and now the two agents are diverting their attention. One of them is talking to me, and one of them is talking to Bill. And so I say to the one talking to me, what do you think that you saw? Like, what do you think Bitcoin looks like? And he says, oh, well, I think they're tokens or medallions. And so I say, well, I want to talk to a superior officer because I don't think you know what you're talking about.
I want to talk to a better person. You're not good enough. That's what that sounds like. I like it. You got to remember, these people are hired off the pizza boxes these days. And I'm not kidding. That's literally true. I've seen the pizza boxes.
So that upset him, and he said that he was happy to involve – he was the superior officer, but he was happy to involve law enforcement if I wasn't going to cooperate. And so then it turns into this discussion about he has an interest in knowing whether or not I'm traveling internationally with more than $10,000. And I asked, well, how much do you think that Bitcoin is worth? And he says, well, I understand that it's very volatile. Now, at this point, I'm actually scared because I don't know why they're asking for this. I don't know. Like, they haven't asked to see my laptop or my phone, but I do have Bitcoin on my phone. So I don't know whether or not this is some sort of money laundering scam or this is some sort of like – I don't. They might be willing to disappear me right now. But Bill Buport, when the other agent is asking him questions, he reveals that I'm flying to San Francisco. And the moment that they learn that I'm not flying internationally – they say, oh, well, nothing to see here, and they turn around and they leave.
Well, you do know that recently somebody at the TSA refused someone's Washington, D.C. driver's license because they didn't know what Washington, D.C. was. They said, no, I need to see American ID, please.
Yeah, Washington, D.C. is not part of America.
It's not technically, but for the TSA purposes, it is.
It's an American protectorate, like Iraq or something. It's an occupied zone.
Or Puerto Rico. Yeah, but it's more occupied than Puerto Rico. So go on.
So I go to the terminal. It doesn't end there. They stop asking me questions, and I'm very shaken. And Bill and I go to the terminal and immediately begin making an audio recording of our account while our memories are fresh. And so that recording is available at bitcoinnotbombs.com. But while we're making this recording, the supervisor in the orange shirt kind of walks through the terminal, and he's clearly looking for me. And then he stations a blue shirt near our gate, and he's keeping an eye on me. And then there's two police officers, both in flak jackets and carrying sidearms, who are like hanging around our gate until we leave. So even after they realize that they didn't have jurisdiction based on this law that they've got, they still like felt the need to monitor me, to intimidate me, to look for some other justification. I think
it was a show of force. It was they were bested because they realized that they were idiots, and so they had to show you, hey, we may be idiots, but look how many people with guns we can have.
Right. No, absolutely.
It's kind of right. like well, the bully. Davi, we're going to go ahead and keep Davi on for another segment or two. Is that cool with you, Davi?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, man. Stay with us, fiends. We're going to take a trip to the market.
Cat Stevens.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Tasty fried Quislings. I go to Beastlick, Wyoming. Beastlick, Wyoming still has a drive-in movie theater, and they serve crispy fried Quislings there.
Is that a cannibalism joke?
I don't know, man. I don't even know what that is. You'll have to explain it to me. So, Davi Barker, did they know you were Muslim? You're one of those Muslims, right?
I thought we were going to try that transition a little smoother, but okay.
So here's what I think happened. I think the TSA has gotten some kind of training that Bitcoin is dangerous and it's used for child pornography and weapons of mass destruction.
So is money.
And Well, yeah, but I mean, this is what I think happened, right? So they had their training seminar, and that training seminar included a photo of a pile of brass tokens. And so when they saw my sweatshirt, they said, oh, I've seen that symbol. That symbol equals danger. Ding, focus ding, on ding, that ding, person. Ding, ding, ding. And then when they saw all the metal in my bag, they thought they hit the jackpot. They thought that they had caught someone with a stockpile of these dangerous brass tokens. And so they pulled me aside, and they discovered that there was nothing of interest on my person. But the point is, they targeted me for my sweatshirt. And the reason I know that is because there was nothing Bitcoin-related in my bag. I had sold out of all my Bitcoin pins, and I had given away all of my Bitcoin flyers. And so the only thing Bitcoin-related on my person was the shirt I was wearing.
Huh. So that's profiling. But, I figure they probably are told to be on the lookout for Muslims because the whole reason they
I have a beard.
Yeah, you have a beard, but so does every hipster in Austin, including Nima, and he's not a Muslim. He is
so unless
he's Middle
they got
Eastern
facial
though.
Recognition software. I don't see how they could have identified me as a Muslim. I just look okay. like any other white traveler.
So. Where my mind went with that was I know you probably meant like looks in a database and identifies you as someone who's a Muslim. Where I went to that was like, do they have software that can look at people and tell if they're Muslim? If that's true, like every 70s rocker and, you know, every Southern rocker probably would be in there too, including Cat Stevens, who is a Muslim. Do you like Cat Stevens?
Yeah. Yeah, I grew up on Cat Stevens. When I was a kid, I come from hippie parents. And so like Cat Stevens or Grateful Dead or those, that's the kind of music I grew up with.
Harold Maud is one of my all-time favorite movies, and the soundtrack is entirely Cat Stevens.
Yeah, Harold and Maud is a fantastic movie. I tell people that they don't know what love is until they've seen Harold and Maud.
For those of you who don't know, Harold and Maud is a movie from the 70s about a 19-year-old boy who's dating a 79-year-old woman, and his parents are rich, and they're trying to marry him off to a proper young lady, and he's not interested, and his hobby is, spoiler alert, his hobby is faking his own suicide to irk his mother. And
it's not really a spoiler. I mean, like, he hangs himself in the first scene
of
the movie.
Yeah, there you go. And then he meets this 79-year-old woman at a funeral because her hobby is attending the funerals of strangers, and then it's love at first sight. And man, I really like that movie. Cat Stevens, though, is so weird when he came out and wanted, you know, the head of Salman Rushdie on a plate and wanted him killed
That whole controversy happened. I mean, I'm not going to apologize for that comment, but that whole controversy happened. Like,
you come on our show. Like, this is Right Wing Radio. If you're a Muslim, you have to apologize for what some Muslim you've never met said. Wait, is that the right? Am I doing the voice right?
That was really good. Yeah, I was convinced.
Yeah. Okay.
Sure. Yes, you did it right.
We actually had your buddy, your Muslim buddy, the other Muslim libertarian. What's his name?
You have
probably
a Muslim friend.
Will Cooley, yeah, but there are more than two.
Well, what's the other one I'm thinking of? Will Cooley.
I don't know.
We set up. There was this guy that went on Fox News and said, what was his last name? Was Burka? What was his name, Nima?
Berkman.
Berkman, yeah. He said on Fox News, like, you know, I will challenge anyone, anywhere, anytime to debate me about why Muslims are evil. And, like, we got Will to debate him. And it took a lot of, like, he really didn't keep to his promise. Anywhere, anytime, blah, blah, blah. At first,
well,
he's like,
football game came on, right? This is the guy that ditched the show when football came on.
Yeah, that was once it happened. But I spent weeks setting that up. And, like, at first, he was like, I've never heard of your show. I'm not going to be on it. I'm like, well, dude, you're the guy who said anywhere, any place, anytime. If you want to brag that, you really have to do it. And he finally agreed. Or we'll call you out on it publicly. And he's like, okay. Yeah, but
that's kind of Will's policy too. He's an anywhere, anytime, I'll debate kind of guy.
Yeah, and he was great.
That's why it was perfect.
He was great, and that Berkman guy was just like all ad hominem all the time, and basically tried to get Will to like apologize for what other Muslims he'd never met had done, and Will like steered it back to reality. And then the football game came on, and the guy cut out of the interview two-thirds of the way through and said, I gotta go, the football game's on.
Well, and he didn't know any facts either. Berkman's argument was centered around the chador, the head cover, and complaining
about
child abuse.
Saudi Arabia, right? He was saying, well, the law in Saudi Arabia is tyrannical, therefore Islam is tyrannical.
It is tyrannical.
Exactly, but he couldn't make the distinction between theology and the state, well, between Islam and the state at least.
Yeah. Or even just Muslims in the state. Like, that's the thing. Like, Will and I spend a tremendous amount of our time and effort talking about how corrupt the Saudi Arabian regime is. And the people in Saudi Arabia do. When I was in Saudi Arabia, you know the book everyone was reading? It was Confessions of an Economic Hitman. It was this thing that was like floating around the culture, and people were speaking about it in whispers because that book contained so much of their own government's corruption.
Yeah, it was probably kind of like the what's the Jewish version of that? There was a book written around the turn of the last century.
By way of deception from the ex-Mossad guy.
Yeah, what's it called?
I don't know.
I'm asking if that's the book that you're talking about.
I don't know what that is. I'm talking about the book that The Protocols of Zion is the name of the book.
Oh, okay.
It's just all lies. I couldn't remember this guy's name, Berkman, so I searched anti-Muslim Berkman, and the first thing that comes up is my interview with him. His name is Jack Berkman, so that's the guy, Fox News political analyst. Yeah, so Cat Stevens, man, let's talk about Cat Stevens. I was shocked when he made that statement, because he was like the peace-loving hippie. It'd be like if Jerry Garcia said, like, bring me the head of Richard Nixon on a plate so I can eat it. It kind of came across like that, man. But so what was your what did Cat Stevens do for you as a kid? What did that movie do for you, more importantly?
I was, you know, when I first saw Harold and Maude, I was a goth kid. I was the kid during Columbine. I was in the trench coat mafia. And when I saw Harold and Maude, I followed Harold out of the darkness. I think that movie really kind of saved me. And in a sense, Maude really kind of saved me from that kind of depression.
So if you think you have trouble getting through TSA last week, you're on nationally syndicated radio saying, I'm a Muslim and I was in the trench coat mafia during Columbine. Good luck, man. I hope you have a fast car.
Yeah, I guess I won't get to hang out with Dobby.
The next day after Columbine, I was in that group of kids in our school that walked around in trench coats. And we all got pulled out of class and put in a special group therapy class called Choices. And they like wanted to know, like, what are you upset about? Blah, blah, blah. And
what are you upset about?
You know, like, I was the target of that profiling.
I didn't know the trench coat was a thing until after Columbine.
How old were you during Columbine, Nima?
It wasn't a thing during Columbine any more than Marilyn Manson was the cause of Columbine. I mean, that's so stupid.
The kids that did the shooting used to wear trench coats around the school, and they were nicknamed the Trench Coat Mafia. I think they wore trench coats because what's-his-name, who imitates Jack, what's-his-name? God, I can't remember anyone's names now. Who's the young actor that acts like Jack Nicholson? He kind of sounds like him, and he was in that movie Heathers. You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Christian Slater. That's who the trench coats
were popular with goths because it's a whole lot of black.
Also like kind of a vampire look too. But it's also that movie Heathers had just come out, and he wears a trench coat in that because he's imitating Jack Nicholson. But that was they said in some interview they did it because they liked the movie Heathers, which is like a really dark, funny Hollywood coming of age comedy. It's a good movie,
and it's sort of about a suicide pact too, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. That's why they liked it. Yeah, we want to live forever, man. I don't want to die. I don't want to die. I don't want to kill anyone. It's all good. Life, man. Life is what it's about.
And I mean, that's funny because in the movie Harold and Maude, that was Maude's message, right? Like when Harold finally says to Maude, I love you. She says, that's wonderful. Go out and love some more.
Yeah. I don't know, though. I don't like, not spoiler alert, but I don't really like what she does in the end of that movie.
Yeah, well, you know. That's true. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert that you won't. Nobody is going to like what happens at the end of that movie. I don't understand.
I don't know. I guess some
okay. She
must.
Kills
you
herself.
Know,
her
she
takes
to live though.
They get married, and on their honeymoon, she takes an intentional overdose of sleeping pills, and she's being rushed to the hospital, dying, and she dies, and then he comes out of it and goes to live life. You know.
Wow. Yeah.
Weird coming
of age. That's the
movie
that got
man.
You out of your depression, Davi?
Yeah, absolutely. Because at the end, it's about him having his life to live, and he drove a hearse in the movie, and it was sort of his obsession with death. And he crashes the hearse, and he starts playing the banjo. And I mean, that was another reason why I sort of got interested in playing music.
Yeah, and, Nima, you got to understand how weird it was growing up in the 70s and 80s, late 70s, early 80s, and like how. The options that were available were strange for strange kids. You know, it wasn't like now where like everybody can be strange and it's acceptable, and you had to go really find it. And you had to find weird movies like Heathers. And,
you know what else was good? Did you see Butterflies Are Free? It's a very similar story, but it's about a woman and a blind man.
No.
It's the same kind of a story. Like, he kind of rescues her from her self-destructive nature and whatever. But yeah, I mean, people were telling weird love stories because love is weird.
Yeah,
yeah.
Love
well, you
is
tell weird.
Weird
stories. Tell us
it wasn't
about
quite
your
Twilight in those days.
Tell us a weird story about what? Yeah,
tell us about your zombie book. You have weird stories, don't you?
Oh yeah, okay. So this came out a couple weeks ago. It's called Survivor Max. It's about an 11-year-old boy raised by anarchists surviving alone in the zombie apocalypse. And the premise is he's too weak to fight them off, and so he has to find other ways of dealing with them, whether it's trapping them or distracting them or setting up these elaborate traps for them. Ernest Hancock called it Home Alone with Zombies.
Nice.
Ernest Hancock's awesome, man. I like him. Ernest Hancock.
And there's some there's something interesting with regard to statism being a virus. Am I understanding that
right? Yeah. So this is – I think I have cracked the code on why zombies are popular in the culture. And I think that it is that they are a sort of metaphor for democracy and how it's not working. Because fundamentally, zombies are the only monster that is the majority. Every other monster is
one. Every other monster, there's
the
one.
The village versus the individual
monster.
Yeah, there's
one.
And what's that?
Yeah, there's one. Every other monster, there's one of them.
But zombies
right.
are
scary
because they're hordes.
Zombies is the village versus the individual survivor. Right. It's the fear of the horde that is coming to eat your substance.
And they affect,
right?
And they infect other people and make them into themselves.
Right. They turn your family into your enemy.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like the
That's
state.
Democracy on its face. So what I've added to the zombie monster is I've said – the more aggressive you are,
we got a cliffhanger this. We're going to come back from the market, and Davi will tell you more about cracking the code, the zombie code. Stick with us on the Freedom Fiend.
Yeah. Worms.
We're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. So much truth, it hurts.
Yeah. Yeah, uh-huh. Take us out, Nima Vidotti and Davi Barker.
KKK. We've got Davi Barker.
Stop saying KKK, man.
It's OKKK. It's okay. Trust
people
me.
Don't
okay.
get it.
It's okay because he's Aryan.
He's Aryan.
Yeah, I'm Aryan.
He's Persian. Yeah.
There.
I'm the token white boy on this panel. We got the Persian agnostic and then the white Muslim guy. This is weird, man. What a strange world we live in, this multicultural anything goes.
Yes, and even zombies are allowed. And Davi will let us know the zombie code before the jump. He was telling us, you broke the code, you cracked the code. Tell us
yeah,
what found
so
out.
I think that the reason that zombies are popular in popular culture right now is because subconsciously we're struggling with the fear that democracy is not working. And so I've added something to the monster that I think solves the genre. There's this problem with zombie fans. Like, sometimes zombies are low functioning, sometimes they're high functioning, sometimes they're slow, sometimes they're fast, sometimes they talk, sometimes they don't. And fans argue about this all the time. And so I've added this one detail to the zombie. How high functioning and how aggressive and how fast they are as zombies is dependent on how aggressive they were when they were human. So your average citizen becomes a sort of shambling, slow moving, dumb zombie, but your bureaucrats, right. your police, your soldiers, they become fast running, they become aggressive, they become intelligent, they even remember their muscle memory, so they'll hunt as packs. And so that's how I'm solving this problem in the zombie genre. Is
like
the more
the
aggressive
scariest
of a human you are,
of
the
democracy.
More aggressive of a zombie you are.
I like it. I have a suggestion if you want it. Maybe add to the Nolan chart of zombies whether they vote or not.
Yeah, okay. I could see that.
Yep. Can zombies vote? Do they have, human legal
rights? It's funny that you'd mention that because this goes all the way back. If you go back to I Am Legend, which is sort of regarded as the first zombie novel, in that book, the scientist says, of course they have to resort to violence. They've been denied the voting franchise. So this element of democracy has been embedded in the zombie myth from the very beginning.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, zombie violence is just voting by other means.
Yeah,
right, it is.
I like the zombie thing in literature. You know where I don't like the zombie thing is in gun culture. I mean, you can buy like zombie bullets and zombie targets. And I really think that that's people trying to dehumanize the idea of self-defense. Of like, you know, they're not human. They don't have a soul, you know.
See, I thought it was bringing hipsters into gun culture.
Yeah, there's
I thought
that it was too. Like
a,
too,
a nice treat to entice the hipsters.
Yeah, but
I could
you
see
know,
it either way.
It's like when the cops are training with targets that look like you and me, I don't think you should be training for the coming apocalypse. I'm not saying anything about shooting cops. I'm just saying like they do. They train with targets that look like
but
ordinary
that's
people.
That's exactly right, Michael, because that's preppers who are dealing with their fear that democracy is failing, and when it collapses, right. Those hordes that have been living off of the state are going to be coming for the preppers and their supplies.
Why are so many preppers constitutionalists when really like our system of government as set up by the Constitution is what's going to lead to the eventual collapse? And you know, that may sound like treason or heresy to patriots, but look at it, man. I mean, you say, like, we need to get back to the Constitution. We're living under this is the result of
the
Constitution.
This is the Constitution.
This is the result of all the things they put in on the first page before any amendments of the powers of the government.
They just don't get it. Yeah. I mean, they essentially think if you write on the outside of your house, no zombies allowed, then everything will be fine.
Yeah.
Well, I think what it is it's an arrested development. Like, they realized that the system wasn't functioning, but rather than figuring out what the alternative could be, they just decided to stockpile and prepping. Instead of thinking more, they just decided to start doing. So
I think you should do both. We're not decrying prepping. Prepping's good.
I stockpile some food, absolutely.
But, you know, prepping and waiting for the right power, the right great men to get elected to save the Constitution is not a good plan.
No.
Yeah.
What we need is the right zombie to lead the horde of zombies.
That should be your next book. Now, where can people find –
it's a trilogy, right? It's a trilogy.
It is a trilogy. The first book is called Too Smart to Die, and it is available at SurvivorMax.com. I'm working on the second book now, which is called School Bites. And then the third book is going to be called Psycho Class A.
And you also have the Muslim Agorist and ShinyBadge.com.
Oh, yeah. ShinyBadges.com, BitcoinNotBombs.com, DailyAnarchist.com. I'm all over the place.
Yeah, I got to get .bit more widely propagated so you can just spend 7 cents on each of your 50 domains each year instead of $11 or $12.
Yeah, we'll save you a few bucks there.
Yeah,
I've already got all those domains.
Oh, good. Thanks, man. Thank you very much for coming on. And Dobby Barker, we look forward to more of you on Michael Dean After Dark starting March 10th on Genesis Communications Network. Say worms.
All right, folks.
Worms. Worms. We got to explain worms when we come back.
Yeah, we'll explain worms.
Someone asked me about worms. A program director.
Hopefully I'll get to interview Dobby and we'll have more Dobby on the Fiends blog because I'll get to see him at Texas Bitcoin Conference.
Yay.
But stick with us.
Which
we're
is
go to the
fifth and sixth.
Please pay attention, folks.
Thanks, Dobby.
American Survival Wholesale.
All right. Welcome back, Freedom Fiends. I am Nima Badati. We've got Michael W. Dean on the other end, and we just finished our chat with Dobby Barker, so you can go read his awesome zombie book. He cracked the zombie code. You can also meet up with him, and I'll be there too at the Texas Bitcoin Conference. That's the 5th and 6th of this upcoming week. It's going to be an amazing event, sort of a who's who of all the liberty lovers who get it. I feel like there's a new distinction between different libertarians, and it's those who are totally on board with Bitcoin and cryptocurrency and the blockchain as a great way forward, a great alternative to the state, and those who think, oh man, that's just a bunch of hooey and we're not going to talk about it at all, and if we do, we'll just get Gary North to write a hit piece. There's real, I don't know if they're battle lines, but there's definitely a distinction now. And Dobby tells me that there's also the
Quislings.
People who are into Bitcoin who aren't even into liberty, man. They don't even liberty, bro. They want more government regulation of Bitcoin. They don't think Bitcoin will come into its own until some goons with guns get to decide how it is dispersed, dispensed, and disposed of. And I guess what I want to say is it doesn't work that way. You guys can't do it. That's the whole point. What do you think, Michael?
Yeah, I think so. I absolutely think so. I think that, man – there's such a us versus them emerging as obvious from the government versus the people. Mm. It used to be like, you know, there were kind of united groups like the Tea Party group or the Occupy Wall Street people or the Patriot Gun Lovers. They all have their
big tent Republican Party of the Ronald Reagan days.
But it's getting to the point where it's like, no matter who you are or what you believe, there is a politician actively trying to ruin your life. Like this, who's the Democrat who shot the Obamacare?
Manchin.
Yeah.
Yes.
Joe Manchin. Senator Joe Manchin, when he was run, he's, you know, we make a point on the Freedom Fiends about how politicians say one thing when they're running for office and then another thing when they're elected. And we proved that. We proved it first person with the governor of Wyoming. You and I went and shooting with him, you know, hung out with him, shot guns, filmed him. You put him on the local news as a reporter with him saying, I respect everyone's gun rights. And he was running. That was his only platform.
Saying that he would enforce the Wyoming Firearm Freedom Act. That was the whole point of the story. Yeah, was trying to pin these gubernatorial candidates on that. Like, will you arrest a federal agent if they come and try to enforce federal gun laws in Wyoming? And he said, yes, it's a law and it should be enforced. I don't buy that at all, man. Yeah. The guy's a federal. He was a federal attorney. He was the U.S. attorney for Wyoming.
Who bragged about how many convictions as a federal attorney? Bragged about how many people he'd convicted on gun charges. Which, you know, you look at the list. A lot of them were like people who 10 years ago had a bag of weed, got a felony rap because it was a little over an ounce, and can't own a gun because in their misspent youth, they had some weed. They don't smoke weed anymore, but they can't have a gun to protect their family. And he arrested them because they had a gun. That's not being a good liberty guy. So this guy Manchin, when he was running for office, he made a video that literally, like, this was his campaign video on YouTube. He made a video that if I'd made this video, they would kick in my door or at least detain me and question me. He made a video that was kind of ripping off our friend Gerald Gay, the video he made. He's my quote unquote state rep. He made a video where he was like shooting at metal targets that said like hope and change or something like that on him.
But it was socialism.
Yeah. But no, he made a few of them. He also made a video, which I filmed, which got a lot of hate mail, which was him saying, if you live in this country, speak English. But I told him to say please, which is the one editorial decision I made that he liked, and I'm glad he did. And the other thing is, this is different from all the other speak English or die stuff, because he says it in English and then fluently speaks it without having to look at any script. He speaks it in Arabic and Spanish. I'm like, how many like English first guys can speak Arabic and Spanish? I thought that was pretty cool. But Joe Manchin ripped off that video idea of Gerald's. And filmed him, had a professional videographer film him shooting, like printed out the Obamacare, or said it was a big stack of papers. It was actually only about an inch thick, and the Obamacare is about a foot thick, but maybe it was the draft. He like shoots it with a deer rifle, like, you know, basically a sniper rifle shooting at something symbolizing the president and saying that we need to have a line in the sand against federal intervention, and then like becomes elected as a senator, and then starts doing things like, we need to outlaw Bitcoin. Be consistent, man. If you don't want and then voted for Obamacare. So, you know, they all lie all the time. You can't vote in good – you can't get good zombies in there. It's not going to work.
Because with everything, man, if you're a Republican or a Democrat, if you're a politician, your only job is to say what you think the most people will like to hear. Or the most voters will like to hear. I guess that's the big distinction.
You know, there's that old joke, how can you tell when a lawyer's lying, his lips are moving? That should be brought back as, how do you know when a politician's lying, his lips are moving? And people should say that all the time, everywhere, to everyone.
He decided to be a politician, and that's his job. And all the politicians are lawyers, man. Yeah. So obviously and that Ron, joke rings true.
Ron Paul is the only one who didn't lie much or at all, and he's considered by
his doctor.
He's considered a really not a good politician. Like, he wasn't very effective. He didn't get many laws passed. That's how history sees him. So if you don't lie, you're not a very adequate politician by history standards.
Is politicians don't know anything about anything. How would you ban Bitcoin, Joe Manchin? You have no idea how to do that. You'd be bumbling like those TSA agents asking about how many Bitcoin Davi has stashed in his backpack.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and it's funny because a lot of these pro-gun, small government, I guess, Democrats or Republicans, you know, they love to say things about, like, gun laws are written by people who don't understand guns. And they point to the lady who's, like, the video of the congresswoman saying, we need to outlaw the, you know, the shoulder thing that goes up. If you're a gun guy, you know what that phrase means. Right. So, you know, we make fun of these people that are so stupid. But then, like, these are the people that are supposed to save us from the federal government when they're like, Bitcoin, I see Bitcoin, you know, and their goons see Bitcoin, you know, say some zombie. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All the laws are like that, man. Politicians don't know anything about anything. That's why they became politicians. They decided that they'd use the political means rather than the economic means to gain wealth in the world. And the political means just means pointing guns at people.
And when they need to understand something, basically their experts they turn to are lobbyists from the industry that have agendas. So, let's get on to a different subject here. We wanted to talk about clear communication. Then we're going to talk about staying sober without AA. So clear communication. I got kind of irked at you today. We're going to use you as a bad example of unclear communication, but it's your phone's fault. You can blame your phone. Tell us what happened, Nima.
Okay. So, my morning routine is to sit in the bathroom.
Keep it clean.
That's why I said sit in the bathroom, doing what people do when they sit in the bathroom in the morning. And I go through my Twitter feed to know what's up with the world. You know, back in the day, people would watch the local news. That's not the case anymore, man. No, you sit in the bathroom on your phone. I go through my Twitter feed. I follow journalists and writers and opinion makers and libertarians.
And Ben Swan, who's going to be doing a one-hour interview on this show 2 weeks from today. Ben Swan, the only journalist who's ever had a sit-down with Obama who basically looked Obama in the eye and said, so, why are you killing all the brown babies? That wasn't his wording, but, you know, it was pretty bold.
Stand-up, but yes, he's a stand-up guy, and it was amazing. But, so I follow people like that. That's how I get my news in the morning. And somebody, I think he was friends with Max Blumenthal, who's a really good writer, wrote Goliath basically about how fascist the Israeli state is becoming. And so I thought, oh, okay, this retweet's probably good. I click on it, and it was. It's a snapshot of the comment section in a popular news channel in Israel called Walla. I haven't Snopes this yet. It's too new to Snopes. I don't know if it's real or not, but it sounds about right. And what it is, it's an article called I Was 10 When Baruch Goldstein Shot at Me. And it's referring to a 20 years ago massacre, kind of like a school shooting, where this guy named Baruch Goldstein killed 29 Palestinians, wounded 125 in a mass shooting.
And he's considered a hero. He's considered a hero by a lot of pro-Israeli people, right?
Apparently by everybody in the or a lot of people in the comments section. Comments like, why'd he miss you? He messed up. And comments like, children are not children when they grow up and become martyrs. We need to kill them alive.
That's saying they're not human. Yeah.
Saying they're not human.
They're zombies. It's okay to murder them. They don't have souls. Well, like in Vietnam, they said, oh, the Vietnamese, they don't have souls. We can shoot them, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's like if somebody posted a story about the Sandy Hook massacre and somebody was saying, yeah, I wish he would have killed more kids. That's exactly what this is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I thought, oh, well, that's really good. It's from Tumblr, though.
It's not really good. You're saying really good story to discuss.
Yes,
it's horrible. It's horrible. Yeah, and you sent it to me like, this is horrible. Now, it came up weird on Tumblr. You've never sent anything from Tumblr. And you, the hip young social networking guy who lives on his chromed robot turd phone 24/7, apparently even when you're doing your duties in the morning in the bathroom, you can't get away from it. You don't know what Tumblr is. You know, like, I don't know what Tumblr is.
I know it's like a blog type thing, but I don't really...
You didn't know that it would do what it did, which was
I don't have the Tumblr app.
You sent it to me, and it didn't come up on my end the way it was on your end. It came up with like some guy who wrote the article's like bio, really big on the left with his picture, and he looks like the drummer in my old band, who's someone who I don't ever want to think about again because he's just really a creepy person to be around and always was. And I started reading like his thing because the letters were bigger on his bio. And I'm like, let's see, white, cisgender, queer man, anti-capitalist, anti-racist, anti-patriarch, anti-imperialist, anti-war, but not a pacifist. I'm anti-war, but not a pacifist. Pro-queer, trans-liberationist, anti-new atheism, anti-Zionist. Mm-hmm. He put anti-Zionist in there twice. He's so anti-Zionist. And like, I don't even know what half these things are. Some of these things I am. I'm anti-war. I'm anti-imperialist. I'm pro-capitalist, real capitalism. I am anti-racist. But the thing that really hung me up was cisgender. I'm like, I don't know what that is. like the things are so politically correct now. There's new terms for it. And I had to look it up. And it basically means... you identify as the gender that you were given on your birth certificate, let's say. Uh-huh. So to me, it sounds like sissy gender, though. Like, basically, it was like I felt like the old redneck, you know, like, let's go to, oh, Easy Rider. You know, the rednecks who go up to the hippies and go, are you a boy or a girl? Because they have long hair. And like, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, I saw that. That was common. People did that. And the hippies would be like, they'd flip them off and, you know, ride off on their motorcycles or whatever. And but I pictured like the modern version of that, like someone saying to this guy, what are you? And like him saying like, my gender is identity is so complex, you wouldn't even understand it. You know, like cisgender. It's cool. I looked it up. You said it's like the Nolan chart. Like it's not just gay, straight, male, female anymore. It's more complicated than that.
Yeah. I think now it's a three-dimensional spectrum that people are trying to use now. And so he's on that new stuff. And you were like, I don't know.
I got hung up on that and didn't even. So, yeah. You need a the moral is you need a headline in a tweet.
Write a subject in the emails, even when you just press the share button.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. They'll be right back just as soon as this drone is out of range.
Indeed.
Indeed. It's the Freedom Fiends live talk radio show. I am Nima Vidati here in Round Rock, Texas, on the northern border of Austin. We've got Michael W. Dean flying an Airworm 1. How's it going, Mr. Dean?
It's good. You know, you're going to meet your state rep at that Bitcoin conference.
You keep saying that, coming. But why would I go up and talk to a dirty politician?
I don't know, man. Maybe he's pro-Bitcoin. Maybe that's why he's there, or maybe he wants to regulate it and he's a Quisling. I don't know. But, you know,
he's probably spying. He's probably going to show up with a contingent of goons to confiscate all our Bitcoins.
Well, I was thinking actually, like, you know, maybe after he leaves, after he does that, I was looking at the speakers list at this thing, and it would probably be a pretty target-rich environment for the drones of the United States government.
Yeah.
You would take out half the Liberty mission if they droned it, and, you know...
Don't say that on probably, the air, man. Give them ideas.
They were probably, you know, debating it, but now that they've heard that you and Davi are showing up, not as speakers... Oh, Davi's speaking, I think, but
you're going to be... Presentation.
You and Davi are going to be there. Yeah, you're not on the website. Davi is. So I think you are probably the tipping point of they're going to go, okay, release the drones.
Well, I think that's why it was so smart to put it on the new racetrack, because they're not going to want to destroy their new IndyCar racetrack that they spent billions of dollars on, or however much they spent.
Well, maybe they just have, like, you know, a mint flavored toxic gas that they can pump into there that makes everyone just go to sleep, and then they can come in and take you all to Gitmo and then just air freshen it out and, you know, put some big fans in there and blow it out for, you know, the Lions Club meeting the next day.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't hate Ensure that bad. I wouldn't mind a couple Ensure injections every day.
I wonder if I could call you Collect, if you could call me Collect and I could put you on the air from Gitmo. Probably not, but you could from federal prison. I'd have to give them my information and let them do a background check on me, and it'd be very expensive. We'd have to up the donations on the Freedom Fiends.
Yeah.
They have a monopoly on phone calls out of prisons, and it's horrible. Like, you can only email like three people. They have to vet all the people you're emailing. They have to be able to, you know, they charge you per email. You can't use the web. They charge you for phone calls. And a lot of people, a lot of right wingers too, are like, well, they should, if you don't do the time, if you can't do the crime or whatever it is.
But most of the crimes people are in there for aren't real crimes. That anybody should be doing any real time.
Anybody could end up in there for if they answer the trick question wrong at the TSA screening point or at the traffic stop. You know, I mean, that was the one thing. Like, Boston Tea Party really turned me on to the idea of, like, you know, just like I read his books early on, and I was like, this guy is not a criminal. He's not a drug user. He's seems like a stand up kind of square. Peg America, you know, in a good way, square American.
Yeah. And he's writing, type.
And he's writing these books on how to, like, hide your gun from the police. And I'm like, that's mind blowing. That was really my first introduction to liberty, I think.
Yeah. That fine, upstanding, moral citizens realize that the government is out to get you and is the bad guy. It's not just for conspiracy kooks, man.
His book, Moulin Labe, the whole plot, and this is not really a you know, whatever. It's the first page of the book. It basically, like, the whole thing springs off of, like, a law-abiding citizen getting pulled over for a traffic stop and has a rifle that has a feature that's legal, but the cop misidentifies it as illegal. And that's where the whole thing comes from. The whole story comes out of that. And that can happen to anybody. So we wanted to talk about we're done with tyranny for the day. We're going to talk about solution. We got a great email from a listener named Diana who asked us about recovery without meetings. Now, I'm not breaking my anonymity here. I was a member of AA. I'm no longer. I haven't been to a meeting since 2006. Sorry. I'm sober 20. I'll be sober 20 years, July 7th. And I don't go to meetings, and I'm pretty happy, and I'm not recommending people do that. But I did write a book called A User's Manual for the Human Experience, which you can get on Amazon, about how to do that. But and she's reading it. But we chatted back and forth a bit, and she asked us this question. And you're sober and don't go to meetings, right, Nima?
That's right. Yeah, I had my soberversary on February 2nd. So I guess tomorrow will be my
year
and 1 month.
All right. You're 13. You're going to 13-step your wife? 13, I'm kidding.
Yes. But I stopped going to meeting. Well, no, I went to meeting in November. But it's been a month or two.
So basically, we're not active members of AA. I would say you still might be although I don't know. Anyway, we're going to talk about AA. And, you know, they say press, radio, and films, but I'm not a member, so I'm not breaking my anonymity. I'm an ex-member, and I'm absolutely an ex-member of AA.
Right, and I'm an unactive member. I'm like somebody who suspended their Facebook account, so I can go do other things until I decide to come back.
You can return. If I showed up, they'd be like, who are you? Because it was like I've lived in three different cities since last time I went to one. So,
so
read this this email, and let's address this. And we're also going to take calls. The number is 1-855-660-4261. That's 1-855-660-4261. That's if you're listening live. We are played delayed in some cities. And we'll be back after the break. We're live. If it's 1:30 p.m. in Central Time, we're live for you. We'll be back on the Freedom Fiends to take your calls and talk about meetings.
Meetings.
Yeah.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean, Inoculation from Indoctrination. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
All right, welcome back to the Freedom Fiends live talk radio show. I am Nima Vidati here in Central Texas. We've got Michael W. Dean flying high in the sky on Airworm One. And before we took the trip to the market, we were going to read, we promised you that we'd read you a fan email from Diana explaining, or asking rather, about how to stay sober without AA. Is that okay? Do you need the program? Do you need to be working the steps at all times or mentoring somebody or being a sponsor? But we've actually got Diana on the line. She's
called in. This is a first. This is kind of a first. Yeah. Like we were about to read it, and she's going to call in and I don't know if read it or paraphrase it or what, but then we can answer some stuff, and we can go back and forth, which is better than just addressing an email. So, Diana, how you doing there?
I'm doing great. Worms.
Where you call? It sound like you're calling from the south somewhere. Do you want to be more specific, or you don't need to be? You can be anonymous.
Yeah, I'm calling from North Carolina.
All right. The Tar Heel State. That's what you always say
the
on radio when someone
state.
Says that.
But you know what? I'm a Wolfpack fan, so.
I don't even know what that is. What is a Tar Heel? How did that come about?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Okay, what's your question? What do you want to know about AA?
Yeah, we'll go on that.
Let's do anything.
Okay, well, my question, the email that I sent to Michael, I was aware that, you know, that Michael had been sober for quite a while. And, you know, you just said that you've been sober for, 20 years?
Yeah.
No. I've been sober for 21. And I've kind of gone back and forth with attending meetings and working the program, as they say. I did manage to stay sober for quite a while without meetings, but I was kind of miserable. And then I started going back to meetings again, and it was very helpful. But my email basically was saying, you know, that you know, I'm currently a member, and I really love the structure. You know, and that I recalled that Michael, you had mentioned, you know, how you know, basically how anarchist it is. And I totally agree. And one of the things in the traditions it says is that our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. And that's really true. I mean, it really works very well that way. And the problem with me is that right now is that I love the big book of AA, which the big book is essentially the basic text outlining the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, it was written in 1935.
Published
in 39, right? And you know, I'm just, you know, there's a lot of, over the course of time, you know, the program of AA has kind of been muddied, I think. You know, and one of the things that is particularly troubling to me is the concept of sponsorship. In the first 164 pages of the big book, it mentions nothing about sponsorship. It talks about one alcoholic helping another, yeah. Right? It doesn't talk about, you know, one alcoholic counseling another. It doesn't
talk
about one alcoholic.
You're very much right that it's been infiltrated by pop psychology and by there's kind of like almost a socialist thread in modern psychotherapy. And there's so many people now from like this late 60s to now, you know, going onward, who get in AA and then also get into all sorts of group therapy and non-12-step, you know, that really kind of infiltrates it. And I actually, when I was in AA, one of the things I did as service was I brought a speaker and would have a meeting once a month in the jail, in San Francisco jail at 850 Bryant, and then also at a recovery facility for young felonious males, I guess. And the jail one was pretty cool, actually. I mean, a lot of people who'd go to it just wanted to get out of their cell, but some of the people really wanted to recover. And the one that I did with the youth kids, I mean, they were all sentenced there. They were put there by judges, and it was they let 12-step people come in and speak, but it was not 12-step basis. It was actually based on. It was a watered down version of something called Synanon, which was like attack therapy from the 60s. And it was really creepy. Like, you know, if the kids were chatting when I'd come into the room, like the leader, and they were big on leaders and leadership and, you know, people like great men to having roles over other people, you know, like the guy would say, focus up. And the kids would all, I mean, 50 kids in the room would immediately put their hands on their lap and look at the floor. Like, I'm sorry,
oh,
you know, like the code word, focus up, you know, and that's not AA, but that kind of stuff. And then, you know, a lot of like the heavy handed stuff like that infiltrated AA, and that's not really AA. AA is all about love and all about helping each other. And, you know, it's basically one person speaking to another over a cup of coffee at a table. And it's, you know, whereas everything else that alcoholics tried and failed was someone pointing down to them, like a judge or a cop or, you know, a father-in-law or someone pleading up to them, like a spouse or a child, like, please, daddy, get sober. Whereas AA is like someone who's been where you're going, sitting across a table, looking you in the eye, not judging you. It's about love. It really is. And it's about sharing.
Right.
And then like all this like hardcore, tough love, militaristic boot camp stuff got into it. And then also all of this like really soft, hippie, like, hey, man, it's all good. That just makes me – it's kind of like Mother Teresa backed by guns, you know, like the California kind of attitude. That's not straight AA. Like, I actually started an NA meeting called Lust for Life, which went for 10 years. Like, I was only at it for 4 years, and it went well. Mm-hmm. And it was basically because when I first got sober, I only wanted to be around hipsters who played rock music. And there was a place for that. But after I got a couple years recovery, I quit going to the meeting I started and went to, like, the old-timers meeting called the 449ers, which was like, we take page 449 out of the book, and that's what we do. And it's like, it wasn't, like, gruff, like boot camp. It was just old dudes, like 70s. 80-year-old dudes who've been sober longer than I've been alive. Like, here's what you do, man. You do this, you stay sober, your life gets better. And I really believe in service and I believe in giving back, but I've actually had people tell me I'm stealing from AA because I went for a few years. I sponsor people, I did service, but I stopped going. And people tell me, you're stealing, like as if there's a social contract that I signed by letting them get me sober. And that's not the case at all. You know, so I think I don't encourage anyone to leave AA if it's working for them, but I encourage them to consider options. I think it's a really good place to get sober and a good place to do service. Mm-hmm. It's kind of got a cult aspect that's not in the original book, but it's kind of like, you know, they say, oh, you'll be back. Go ahead and leave. You'll die. You'll be right. Dying. You'll beg for our help. You know, they say, like, if you don't go, they love telling stories about people who, like, you know, had 15 years sober, had a bad breakup, stopped going to meetings, and then blew their brains out. I actually knew people that happened to, but I think they had problems other than alcohol, too, you know?
Well, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And, you know, there seems to be an element of brainwashing that I've become more aware of.
Oh, and then they say it's okay. They say, yeah, well, my brain's needed washing. Yeah. That's the common answer.
Yeah, right. And I've become a lot more aware of it since I've become, in the last year, you know, a lot more interested in the liberty movement. And so I've become a lot more aware, like a lot more, I guess, in, you know, I'm reading your book again, and I've gotten to the point of the place where it talks about the color-coded states of awareness.
Yeah. Cooper,
you know, the
color
white
codes.
Condition, and then the right, and so I'm definitely in code yellow right now. Like I'm you know, paying a lot more attention to the things I see around me, and I'm just seeing a lot more of that. Like it has to be this way, and one of the other things I mentioned in my email had to do with their stance on so-called outside issues. You know, like prescription drugs or marijuana or anything like that. And it's like there's some people that are cool with it and there's some people that are not, but it doesn't address it in the big book.
There's actually a pamphlet. It's an AA approved pamphlet called Problems Other Than Alcohol. I was quoting that when I said that, although I was speaking about mental issues, but the pamphlet, which is approved literature, it's not one of the other books like, you know, the Bill W. story, which isn't part of the canonical, you know, the legend or the Bible of AA, but this pamphlet is conference approved literature. So it is part of that. If you want to take that with a grain of salt, the pamphlet Problems Other Than Alcohol deals with prescription drugs, and it does not take a hard line on it. The thing is, but it also basically says don't fool yourself and be popping a bunch of pills more than you need for your pain and think you're sober. You know, the thing is, too, like, and you mentioned Bill Wilson and his LSD experiments. You know, like, the thing about AA early on, it wasn't all kind of fascist, and it wasn't – and it not all of it is now, but some of it is. It attracts people who have a lot of problems. They get sober, and then suddenly people are listening to them, whereas no one ever listened to them before, or it's been a long time since people have taken their advice. And suddenly there's people looking to them for guidance, and it can be abused without them even knowing it. I have a perfect example of seeing that in action and how the anarchist structure of AA, of no leaders, dissolved it in a way that governments don't have. And Bill Wilson, in his book he wrote in the 50s, 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, which explains how the program works in details, he called AA a perfect synthesis of democracy and anarchy. And he used anarchy in the correct phrase, not as chaos, but as leaderless. And he used it in the 50s when they were rounding people up for being anything but salute the flag, I am a patriotic American. You know, he was a smart guy and he took chances. But here's my example. This story, there was this woman in San Francisco when I was there who was like kind of a like AA beauty queen, and not just beautiful, but like dressed really kind of salaciously for meetings, or very like, you know, business high heels. And she was an attorney. Like, she'd gotten sober and become an attorney. She was kind of like, I remember thinking like, wow, if I'm sober long enough, I could marry a woman like that. You know, that's the prize. Like, she looked like the prize. And she had, like, you know, 8 years sober, like had 20 sponsees, 20 ladies she was sponsoring. And she really like had it, you know? Mm-hmm. And the thing that happened, okay, she got elected as the secretary of the meeting, the leader of a huge downtown meeting. It was like the big Friday night, like 300 people, everyone gets dressed up to go to this kind of social meeting. Not a lot of recovery, but a lot of like, woo, we're sober, party. Yeah. It's where everyone went to get their chips because it was so exciting.
Right.
So after 6 months, there's supposed to be an election and they get another leader. You know, there's no like set leader, so it doesn't become my meeting. But she wouldn't give it up after 6 months. And she's like, no, I'm running this meeting better than anybody could. And she would not, you know, and basically some other longtime members, like people who'd been going to that meeting, who started that meeting, people who were there when she was still drinking, like basically had a meeting without her afterwards and said, like, we got to get rid of her. And tried to have a vote to get rid of her, and she brought in a bunch of biker friends to, like, keep her in. Everyone quit going to the meeting until she was the only person there, and then she quit, and then they all came back. And that's how it should work, man. Thanks for your call, Diana, and we look forward to more from you. And we'll be back on the Freedom Fiends with Nima Vedotti and Michael Dean after this.
We're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. So much truth, it hurts.
Live Talk Radio Show. It's been a fun show. Thank you for sticking with us, folks. I, of course, am Nima Vedotti, MWD over there on Airworm 1, flying high in the sky, beaming straight to us through satellite uplink. And yeah, man, we went over a few great things. We talked to Davi Barker about the TSA trying to search his bag for physical bitcoins, which is not a thing.
At least they didn't try to, like, search his junk for bitcoin.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, yeah. And yeah, we had a caller just now who was asking us about, can you stay sober without AA, and what do you think about that? And Michael has, and I am.
Although coffee, I don't know, coffee's a hell of a drug. Yeah, but you know what? Coffee's not really a mind-altering drug, and you don't ruin your life for coffee. Although if heroin were legal, you probably wouldn't ruin your life for heroin. Although you still would ruin your life for smack or speed or meth, but or speed or coke, because those just you can't be a functional those things anyway. But you know, there's opiate addicts who are like lawyers and doctors, and there's actually some stories in the Big Book of AA. There's one called Doctor Addict Alcoholic. It's about a guy who was – is that your cat or mine meowing? I'm easily distracted by shiny things. We just got something.
You are drinking too much coffee.
I am. If you want to go to the Freedom Fiends Facebook page, someone Crazy Rich, who is our – that's kind of funny because it could sound like is he crazy or is he like so rich it's crazy rich? I don't know. But he is the head of our Ministry of Propaganda, and he like – picked off a code word that I said, I guess. I said something. We were talking about the Cooper color charts, and like 6 minutes later, he'd made this awesome meme and posted it on Facebook and sent it to us. It's the Homeland Security Michael W. Dean caffeination scale, and it's got threat levels of like green is low, and it's he'll be giving audio advice. Blue is guarded, general risk of liberty rhetoric. You want to read the rest there, Nima? The yellow?
Yellow is, oh man.
Significant risk of cat pictures.
Yes. Orange is high risk of vaping caused audio noise. And red, severe risk of libertarian rant. Or AA rant, apparently.
Yeah. Well, it was a libertarian AA rant. It was about the anarchist roots of AA and how it's been co-opted by the state, basically. You and I did a very good two-part Wednesday non-radio show a long time ago that I recommend people go find. It was, I think it was called "And in Lib Pair, All Drugs Would Be 7 Cents a Dose" is one of them.
Yeah.
And we broke down historically the history of the recovery industrial complex, which co-opted AA, and
we talked about impact training and attack training and all of those.
You know, a lot of those people are probably moved over to working at the TSA and training TSA people now. I wouldn't be surprised. It's kind of the same pool of job descriptions, and we're not doing Wednesday shows anymore. We announced that last week. We may do one once in a while, but we're just too busy between you being a new daddy and working 70 hours a week and DJing on the side, and me doing a new radio show, and I'm going to be doing 7 shows a week starting the 10th. And I'm trying to build the roads and save the world and save the internet, first with Free Speech Me and upcoming with something that can't be mentioned, but more will be revealed, as they say in AA.
Yes, more will be revealed. And next week is the Texas Bitcoin Conference. If you are anywhere in Texas or close enough, drive down. If you're farther away, fly down. Do whatever you got to do. But if you're interested in seeing like something like 40 or 50 speakers from the upper echelons of the Liberty Movement, if there is echelons at all in the Liberty Movement, but people that
Because, you know, the big rock stars of it, like, you know, you and I are kind of like really popular garage band that tours a lot. And then there's some rock stars. Well, I write the rock stars. They don't answer me back, or they're like, get away from me, kid. You bother me. They're kind of like that. There are echelons.
Well, I think what it is they like the people that go to conferences with them that they see regularly. Because yeah, you can build a rapport in person that is much more.
That's true.
If I strong
left,
bond
if I left
than
the
on
house,
the internet.
I'm complaining that I don't get enough love. But if I left the house, maybe I would. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
The state,
so
yeah. Also,
I'm
if you're
stoked
flying,
about finally going to one of these things. Man.
But if you're flying to it, don't have Bitcoin in your luggage.
Yes. Leave the Bitcoin in your safe deposit box at your bank. All right, or, folks. Thanks so much for joining us. I will be back tomorrow, Sunday.
So
I'm back on Sundays.
So good having
I'll
you back.
I'll see y'all then, man. Worms.
Freedom Fiends. It's been good, Nima. Thank you. Worms. Worms, 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 worms.
Thank you for listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Make an appointment to listen while it's still legal. Learn more about the Fiends and download archived shows at freedomfiends.com. That's FREEDOMFEENS.com.